The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. On this installment of Century of Lies, we're going to hear about Afro-Colombian and indigenous cultures in Colombia, coca growing, and cocaine. But first, I was recently in Berkeley, California for some meetings, took a walk through campus, and found myself in Sproul Plaza. The following was recorded 55 years ago on December 2nd, 1964, in front of Sproul Hall, in Sproul Plaza, there on the Berkeley campus. The speaker is Mario Savio.
You know, I just want to say one brief thing about something the previous speaker said. I didn't want to spend too much time on that because I don't think it's important enough, but one thing is worth considering. He's the nominal head of an organization supposedly representative of the undergraduates, whereas in fact, under the current directives, it derives its authority as delegated power from the administration. It's totally unrepresentative of the graduate students and TAs. But he made the following statement, I quote, "I would ask all those who are not definitely committed to the FSM cause to stay away from the demonstration." All right, now listen to this. "For all upper division students who are interested in alleviating the TA shortage problem, I would encourage you to offer your services to department chairmen and advisors." That has two things. A strike breaker and a fink. I'd like to say one other thing about a union problem. Upstairs, you may have noticed already on the second floor of Sproul Hall, locals 40 and 127 of the Painters Union are painting the inside of the second floor of Sproul Hall. Now, apparently that action had been planned sometime in the past. I've tried to contact those unions, unfortunately, and tears my heart out, they're as bureaucratized as the administration. It's difficult to get through to anyone in authority there. Very sad. We're still making an attempt. Those people up there have no desire to interfere with what we're doing. I would ask that they be considered and that they not be heckled in any way. And I think that, you know, while there's unfortunately no sense of solidarity at this point between unions and students, there at least need be no, you know, excessively hard feelings between the two groups. Now, there are at least two ways in which sit-ins and civil disobedience and whatever, at least two major ways in which it can occur. One, when a law exists, is promulgated, which is totally unacceptable to people, and they violate it again and again and again till it's rescinded, appealed. All right. But there's another way. Sometimes the form of the law is such as to render impossible its effective violation as a method to have it repealed. Sometimes the grievances of people extend to a whole mode of arbitrary power, a whole mode of arbitrary exercise of arbitrary power. And that's what we have here. We have an autocracy which runs this university. It's managed. We were told the following. If President Kerr actually tried to get something more liberal out of the regents in his telephone conversations, why didn't he make some public statement to that effect? And the answer we received from a well-meaning liberal was the following. He said, "Would you ever imagine the manager of a firm making a statement publicly in opposition to his board of directors?" That's the answer. Well, I ask you to consider, if this is a firm, and if the board of regents are the board of directors, and if President Kerr, in fact, is the manager, then I tell you something, the faculty are a bunch of employees, and we're the raw materials. But we're a bunch of raw materials that don't mean to have any process upon us, don't mean to be made into any product, don't mean to end up being bought by some clients of the university, be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone. We're human beings. Yeah. And that brings me to the second mode of civil disobedience. There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all. That doesn't mean, and it will be interpreted to mean, unfortunately, by the bigots who run the Examiner, for example. That doesn't mean that you have to break anything. 1,000 people sitting down someplace, not letting anybody by, not letting anything happen, can stop any machine, including this machine, and it will stop. We're going to do the following. And the greater the number of people, the safer they'll be, and the more effective it will be. We're going, once again, to march up to the second floor of Sproul Hall. And we're going to conduct our lives for a while in the second floor of Sproul Hall. We'll show movies, for example. We tried to get Enchant d'Amour. Unfortunately, that's tied up in the court because of a lot of squeamish moral mothers for a moral America and other people on the outside. The same people who get all their ideas out of the San Francisco Examiner. Sad, sad. But Mr. Landau has gotten to some other films. Likewise, we'll do something which hasn't occurred at this university in a good long time. We're going to have real classes up there. There are going to be freedom schools conducted up there. We're going to have classes on the First and 14th Amendments. We're going to spend our time learning about the things this university is afraid that we know. We're going to learn about freedom up there, and we're going to learn by doing.
That was Mario Savio speaking at Sproul Plaza at the University of California, Berkeley, on December 2nd, 1964. Audio came to us courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archive, 55 years ago, and today his words ring truer than ever. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. Back in 2012, I had the pleasure of attending the National Conference of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. While I was there, I saw my good friends and mentors, Mike Gray and Kevin Zeese. Managed to talk them into letting me record some audio with the two of them. Here's that.
What's great about having victories is that you can see that what we're doing actually works. It actually does not create the crisis that the prohibitionists fear or that they propagandize. It creates actually a safer environment. Really, there have been so many positive changes and so much evidence that what we're doing is actually going to make a better society that we have an incredible opportunity. So I hope that we can all keep organized. And I just wanted to reemphasize one of the points, which was the solidarity. It's so important. So often in politics, it's the side that's divided that loses. And divide and rule is the classic strategy of those in government who want to stop things from moving forward. So we've got to, if we're going to have divisions, they should be in private rooms. We talk and debate and discuss. But once something's on the ballot, we need to come together and support it and make whatever change we can make within the reality of the political sphere and push from there to the next level of change. And so let's see more solidarity and less division as we get closer and closer to our ultimate goal.
My God, you've been. When did you first get involved?
78.
In 78.
I remember coming into the NORML office as Keith Strzok was leaving. He was carrying a box out.
No.
As I was walking in.
Oh my gosh.
He was kind of leaving under a cloud, and thankfully that cloud has been removed, and he's continued to do good work, but. I do remember me coming in and him going out. It's pretty. And as I was a law student then. Yeah. I was a student then. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Amazing.
It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you've sure proven yourself to be
persistent,
I would say, at the very least. And that's a damn, well, that's, hey, you know, that.
That's a big part of politics, persistence.
It's not only that, in Hollywood, that's the one thing they can't handle.
Persistence?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, if you keep coming back, finally the guy says, oh, if that son of a bitch comes back again, and then you show up again, he says, all right, I'll talk to him.
That was an interview with Kevin Zeese and the late Mike Gray that I recorded back in 2012. We were at the Normal National Conference in Los Angeles. Mike and Kevin were both board members of Common Sense for Drug Policy, a nonprofit for which I work and which sponsors the website drugwarfacts.org. Sadly, Mike passed away in 2013. He is sorely missed. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Commission on Narcotic Drugs will meet in Vienna, Austria on December 12th and 13th for its reconvened 62nd session. Those meetings are webcast live, and until recently were only webcast live, with no archived copies being made available. That's changed, kind of. Their October intersessional meeting was webcast, and in addition to the UNODC's usual live stream, the webcasts were streamed via YouTube on a channel belonging to the Secretariat to the Governing Bodies UNODC. Those videos are still on YouTube, but unfortunately they're unlisted. That means they don't appear on the user page for Secretariat to the Governing Bodies UNODC, nor are they listed in YouTube search results or in Google search results. You can only view those videos if you can find the actual URL, which I'm glad to help you with. I have those URLs on my Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Douglas Allen McVeigh. Now, hopefully, CND will continue to use YouTube to stream their meetings. It would be great if they'd also make those videos public. Cross fingers they do. I'll still record the audio just in case. I mean, these are major policy discussions that have lasting impact. They should not go on in darkness. All right, enough of my rant. Let's get to the next segment. One of the people who spoke to the delegates at that October intersessional was Pedro Arenas Garcia, an NGO representative from Colombia.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Good afternoon for all. My name is Pedro Arenas. I come from Colombia. In the 80s, at the same of the other people, I went to work like a coca picker when I was 13 years old and started to obtain my first incomes. After I was mayor in my local city, I was a congressman in the period between 2002 and 2006. And currently I am director of the one project titled Observatory of Crops and Cultivators Declared Illicit. And my role consists in accompanying communities where is implementing the crop substitution program started with the last Peace Accord in my country. But I prefer developing my intervention in Spanish. Como líder cívico en mi país.
As a leader of civil society and decriminalization lawyer, as for farmers, here, I work from a human rights perspective. I've been working for the defense of human rights. I have witnessed the organization of Colombian farmers who came together under a umbrella association, including with indigenous individuals. These are people who depend on the culture of coca, poppy, and poppy crops. I'd like to state here that we stood against the glyphosate air campaigns. These were the dropping of this pesticide, which happened over a period of 25 years. More recently, though, as I was saying in the beginning, I also witnessed the commitment taken by these indigenous farmers who decided to rebel against their own bosses as for the cultivation of coca from 2017 and 2018, almost 40,000 hectares were destroyed. This was in a voluntary manner through the families who committed to the program and national plan for crop substitution. This was a high point. But let's look at who was behind these programs. Each hectare is about 500 tons of cocaine. In my country, each hectare produces about 2.5 kilos of paste, which is then made into cocaine through a processing process, which leads to 1 kilo of cocaine per base input. There are 5 crop harvests of coca each year, so you can calculate it for yourself. We're talking about 2.5 equivalent to what the Counter-Narcotics Authorities sees when they seize an international delivery. According to the Colombian government, just this year, more than 400 tons of cocaine were seized. We're seeing an increase in seizures of cocaine in Africa, Asia, and in the Americas. Yet, Colombia, without a doubt, is the country doing most when it comes to seizures. This being the case, in Europe and America, there continue to be deliveries of alleged bananas. Actually, these deliveries contain cocaine. Cocaine is also camouflaged in other types of export products. This is a containerization, if you like, of cocaine. It's obvious, even if you just follow the media, as for Colombian seizures of cocaine. Again, as I said, this is a containerization, and that is what we must address, because problems like programs such as AIRCOP, as the UN, are good, but this container issue has to be addressed. Now, when it comes to initiatives, allow me to point out that civil society, which I represent here, sees alternative development as a way for risk and damage reduction in productive communities. This is a human rights-based strategy, and one which reduces risk when it's done in a participatory manner. When you voluntarily replace crops, you see that local communities are able to take part in the implementation of programs. But crop substitution and alternative development in general are processes. It's not possible to require short-term results, as we heard this morning from other panelists. That is because these type of short-term projects, as was stated this morning, are simply not lasting in nature. They're not sustainable. Very often you're talking about weak results, short-term ones. That's what happens when there's obligatory eradication of crops in India. We saw that when this strategy is not a part of integrated alternative development, what you get is the reseeding phenomenon. You reseed, regrow the crops after forest eradication. And at that point, you get a 60% increase, according to UNODC, of crop production than before the forced eradication. In countries like Colombia, we saw that families engaged in crop substitution after 1 year after having pulled out illicit crops don't go back to reseeding them. So you don't get that phenomenon, the reseeding phenomenon. With crop substitution and alternative development, you still need to envisage other measures in terms of the hectares. You have to measure efforts with respect to development across the entire territory impacted. This is about land ownership for families without land, ensuring that the process is a way to substitute, yes, but also provide technical assistance, food security, and long and medium-term production strategies with added value crops. In particular, food crops. And there has to be infrastructure for access to markets and ensuring security. Now, when it comes to access to markets, the statement made by Senegal this morning was extremely relevant. What he said was that there had to be focus on the substitution strategy, but not just about coffee or cacao. Mexico this morning also said that there was a need to ensure that alternative development as for illicit crops would take into account the context of the behavior of different other farmers. Coca leaf, for an example, that's a crop, just like potatoes in another context, or even grapes. Those are crops, ones which feed millions of families in terms of sustenance. In Colombia, we're talking about 200,000 families in more than 100 municipalities in 2017 and 2018. Those are the figures. Moreover, more recently, there have been changes in the laws ensuring that medical use of marijuana is permitted. This means job creation, scientific progress, and also the development of new medications for people. Now, indigenous persons and farmers often lack access to opportunities offered by this new market. In the majority of cases, this is a new market, which, as Jamaica said, could be an opportunity for alternative development and for indigenous communities. Yet this is impossible as long as this sector remains in the hands of the pharmaceutical companies, having the sole interest of increasing profit. So this market must be open to small communities as well. By way of conclusion, as for civil society, we ask for the United Nations to fully integrate into crop substitution strategy the guiding principles of alternative development, ordered logically, including local communities, in the development process and with regard to the SDGs and human rights. This means the non-use of force from governments with respect to these communities. Instead, acknowledging the fact that these people are fully fledged citizens. The UN should adopt measures providing for new opportunities for indigenous communities as when it comes to legalized cannabis. We've just published the report I'm showing you here, and it's exactly about this topic. Finally, for the UN's role, most respectfully, we think that the UNODC could provide technical assistance to governments promoting alternative development without undermining the sovereignty of states. In some cases, the UNODC could monitor commitments undertaken for progressive reduction of crops, illicit production. And this could be through financing national governments, ensuring that they become driver and participant in the process, also increasing their accountability to citizens. This is the challenge, ladies and gentlemen, better understanding crop trends in the current context of international trade. Another challenge, and we agree with many who said this morning, is better assessing the production of certain crops. And I'm talking about follow-up from international organizations on crops based on true productivity indicators or yield indicators. We might say that an increase in seizures in South America and in the rest of the world could be replaced by new crops in other countries with available land for cultivation and with governance issues. There's another challenge that is according priority to integrated agriculture as a way of risk prevention in agricultural communities. Thank you.
That was Pedro Arenas Garcia, a representative from a Colombian NGO. He spoke to the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs at their most recent intersessional meeting. Again, the CND will meet for its reconvened 62nd session on December 12th and 13th in Vienna, Austria. The 63rd session of the CND is tentatively scheduled to be held in March, on March 2nd through 6th in 2020 in Vienna, Austria. Well, for now, that's it. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.